From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for February 5th, 2021. Your Milwaukee Bucks are in Cleveland tonight and Saturday night. Apparently, they're being punished. Let's get started with two stories from Florida. A Floridian with the state of Florida tattooed on his forehead has twice called 911 because he needed a ride home. He almost made it too, but the cops insisted on stopping at jail first. Another Floridian who was charged with sex crimes set up a GoFundMe page so he could flee the country. It didn't work. And what more do you need to know about that? A robber at the nation's capital wore his company jacket with his phone number on the back during the riot. The FBI arrested him without even checking the Mensa files. With Valentine's Day just around the corner, we have these two nuggets. The Canadian Funhouse Candy Company is hiring candy tasters. You work 15 hours a week, you get paid $30 an hour, and you get to work from home. And you're welcome. On the other end of the Valentine spectrum, we have our annual love story from the San Antonio Zoo. For $5, the zoo will paint your ex's name on a cockroach and then feed it to the zoo's birds. But if that's not dramatic enough, for $20, they'll paint your ex's name on a frozen rat and feed it to a snake, all of which you can watch on TV. Romance may be dead, but not as dead as those rats and cockroaches. On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, Paige Ratke, Joel Driesing. And wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
As always, thank you for that, Max. Well, a strong week overall for stocks. The NASDAQ up 6% this week. The S&P 500 up 4.6% this week, a string of five consecutive up days for the S&P 500. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 3.9%. Closing today up 92 points at 31,148. As you get a look at the year here, the Dow Jones Industrial Average back to positive territory, now up 1.9%, the S&P up 3.6%, and the NASDAQ a strong 7.5% through really a month and a week here. As we look at the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury, a bump higher, meaningfully higher this week, closing at 1.17% for that benchmark yield. And so, overall, again, a strong week for stocks, a lot of, I think, positive things to talk about as we look at, some of what drove returns this week. But maybe just to start, we touched briefly on some of these Reddit trades last week, some of the difference between trading and investing. And I feel like this may be one of those conversations that hangs around for a couple of weeks until we ultimately can digest it completely, and maybe move on to what really matters. But just an update, if you've been reading, if you've been paying attention, if you were one of those many people who gambled on some of the big names that have been discussed, you probably lost a lot of money this week if you were stuck holding around. Certainly, it's something that we saw coming, those price increases not driven by any fundamental change for the businesses. And what's left is how many people are buying versus how many people are selling. You got a lot more sellers this week than you got buyers. And so, the ones left holding the bag are losing significant amounts of, potentially what they gained, or even worse, losing significant amounts of what they put in if they got into those trades late. And so, Paige and Art, I'm sure you both have been asked about it. Clearly not something that we do, but I wonder if either or both of you have some thoughts on what we've seen.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely been asked about it, whether it be clients, my neighbor, my chiropractor, you name it, everyone has been asking me about what's going on with GameStop. But I think, the big thing is just this is a reminder to everyone that investing is supposed to be boring. It's not supposed to be a wild ride. It's not supposed to be something that you do for fun. It's supposed to be something that you do for long-term security and long-term growth of your assets. And so the moment that you start sort of playing into these, really games, when you're looking at stocks like GameStop jumping in that way, you're gambling. And so, just a reminder to the clients that that's not something that we do. That's not something that we really want to chase. But personally, I think the biggest component of this that interests me is just the regulations that we're going to see come out of this. You know, this is not the regulations have not been able to keep up sort of with the increase in technology, the increase in crowdsourcing. And so, you know, I would expect to see some new rulings regarding market manipulation, maybe some new rulings regarding the risks that hedge funds are taking on, and particularly the impact that that has on stocks. So this will be an interesting thing to watch play out. And it's definitely something I'm still keeping my eye on.
Yeah, I have a couple, as the old timer here, I have a couple ideas with respect to why this actually could turn out to be beneficial for investors. In the first place, even though there's a significant difference, as Paige points out, between speculating and investing, this highlights the downside to speculating as well as the upside. It does call attention to the fact that people can make money by investing. So I think we're broadening the base of potential investors just because of people asking these questions, hearing about, gee, you can make money in whatever this is, even though it's the wrong way to do it. And the second thing is we've had conversations over time about bubbles. Every once in a while, things get priced so high. We talked on the show a few weeks ago about this concept. Some people think the stock market is a bubble that's going to burst. Kyle, you and I have talked about this repeatedly. From my perspective, these are mini bubbles. So the speculators then are risk, you know, putting excessive amounts of money into these things that are mini bubbles, which I think are sparing the overall market from having a bubble. So let the speculators go play, let them beat themselves up, while the rest of the market just goes up nicely as it's been doing the past couple of years.
You know, I think I see this as a bit of a teachable moment for a lot of people that are new to investing, right? That maybe your first experience in it is, you know, some gamification, some activity that gets you interested in it. But longer term, you're going to learn to do things the right way. And so, you know, Art, I think you rightfully point out, if this can be a thing that gets more people financially literate, maybe it's not the way we wanted it to happen, right? We'd prefer that people don't have to learn the hard lessons that, you know, we can just learn from what other people have done. But if you've got to learn the hard lessons, at least maybe you can figure out the right way to do things, you know, when all is said and done. And so my hope is that this doesn't turn people off from investing. My hope is that, you know, we can use this as an opportunity to teach, you know, those people who maybe their first experience was in some of this type of trading environment. I mentioned, you know, how strong of a week it was. I think one of the, you know, significant things driving stocks this week has been, you know, some pretty significant progress on this potential $1.9 trillion stimulus bill. We've got a long way to go, clearly, still between, you know, passing the measures that allow us to pass the bill, which is what's more or less happened this week, you know, putting the reconciliation tool on the table for the Senate and the House to pass this bill, and actually passing a stimulus bill. And so I don't want to say that $1.9 trillion is going to be the final dollar amount. It does appear more and more likely that we're going to fall somewhere on the upper end of what the range has been than on the lower end. But as you look at things that drive the market, a significant one, I think, is the realization that more money is coming for the people who need it, that we've talked for a long time about employment issues. And certainly we can get back to some of the more recent employment data that's out there, but incredibly encouraged by, you know, I think the direction that the market has taken in response to that. And then you look at case counts of COVID-19 starting to maybe come back down after a significant post-holiday peak. You look at encouraging news on vaccines. All of these, I think, are driving expectations that we get to an environment in which things look a little better. And so, you know, Art, I think, you know, as we talk to investors about what matters, it often, you know, gets back to the earnings piece, right? That if we can reopen the economy in a way that gets us back to where, you know, we think we're supposed to be now, you know, that's going to be a helpful thing for stocks. Of course, the only way we do that is to have people feel more confident. And it seems like the news this week is starting to point back in that direction.
Yeah, it does all seem to be going in that direction, and it's refreshing. But it is a similar pattern to what we had happened last year. I mean, the news of the pandemic almost exactly a year ago was devastating. Stocks got clobbered. Congress rode to the rescue and appropriated, I think, $2 trillion at that point, something like that, toward the relief, the coronavirus relief thingy, whatever it was called. And then the Fed stepped in and lowered interest rates dramatically and started quantitative easing all over again. And it's really worked, even though you can't see it working. This is just another example of relief being provided to those most in need, as you indicated, and they're going to be spending that money. And even though I've had questions from clients about this, you know, huge deficit that we're growing, you know, daily by these expenditures, it seems that the important thing is to keep things from getting worse, stabilize the patient so that the vaccines then can kick in, the economy can then stabilize, spending can increase, and then corporate profits are going to rise. And the stock market is a leading indicator, is telling us that this seems to be the right prescription, and it's good to see the patient responding.
And Art, it's interesting that there's talk of limiting who those the stimulus payments go to. And part of the thought there is that not everybody who received the stimulus the first time around, you know, actually did what they were supposed to do with it, and that's to spend it. I saw a New York Fed study that showed that 36% of those on that first stimulus, the one that happened a year ago, the first stimulus payment, 36% saved the money. 35% paid down debt, which isn't a bad thing as far as the economy is concerned. But what you're saying is what we really want is people spending. And for that, only 18% of everybody who, you know, received those payments a year ago bought essential things like, you know, rent or food, things like that.
Paige, maybe some of the other part of the optimism right now is just how strong earnings appear to have come in for the fourth quarter. You know, our expectations were for as much as a 10% decline in earnings for the fourth quarter, and it looks like now we're going to get a positive number. And as you extrapolate then out what 2021, 2022 start to look like, the earnings picture is a little better than I think what we had thought initially.
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking, especially at the earnings, like you said, we actually had a much better fourth quarter than we thought we were going to have. Corporate profits had an increase. It was the only year-over-year increase that we saw in 2020, which was surprising to a lot of people. But the reality is, you know, we are a consumer-based economy. And so when you have more money coming into people's pockets, you know, that's obviously going to be a big boost. But then you also have people that are, you know, staying at home. And, you know, you would think that maybe they're not spending as much money. So you're seeing that hurt the restaurant industry, the travel industry, places like that. But people are still out there spending money. And I think that ultimately for corporations, that's going to be the biggest component. I mean, sort of taking it back to some of the stimulus package that is now on its way through the government. I know there are some pieces in there that have been a little bit concerning for a lot of clients that I've talked to. And, you know, the fear that these corporations are just going to be crushed by things like increasing the minimum wage. But we have to remember that, number one, that's going to be something that happens slowly. And number two, if corporations are aware that it's happening, they know that it's coming, they can plan for it. And so I think that's also sort of a nice thing going forward, is we have a little bit more clarity coming out of our government. So even though some of these policies might at face value appear as they're going to hurt corporate profits, again, people are going to get back out there. That increase is going to go back into the economy, and corporations are going to find a way to make money.
And I think, Paige, that's the key, is we've gone through periods where minimum wage has jumped significantly. We've gone through periods where the input costs jumped significantly. We've had all kinds of challenges to corporate profitability. And I think one of the incredible things about American businesses that we've realized through the years is that they find ways to make money. What we saw even in the midst of this pandemic was that immense productivity gains have led to the ability potentially to have some pretty significant gains as we look ahead to what comes, whether that's higher minimum wages, whether that's, you know, any number of other issues. You know, and I think, you know, certainly there's plenty to keep an eye on as we figure out what this stimulus bill actually ends up looking like. But at least we know that we have a history of navigating these kinds of things. and still having corporations find ways to stay profitable. You know, Joel, quite a bit of economic news this week. You know, I mentioned the employment information that's been coming out. You know, not the best of news on the employment front. Even this week, we continue to see the pandemic weighs on the jobs market. We continue to see, you know, I think a bigger issue is the long-term unemployment numbers and you know, permanent job destruction that we've seen as a result of this pandemic. And so what's the news telling us right now? What's the economic data telling us right now?
Well, Kyle, today we had the jobs report that comes out once a month from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's one of the most highly watched government economic indicators. And, you know, it showed that the employers hired 49,000 more people than they let go last month in January. So that's good news. But there wasn't a whole lot of good news in there. I mean, that 49,000 isn't a whole lot in an economy that's still reeling from the pandemic. We're still, you know, 9.9 million jobs down from where we were last February. I took a look at this, and 43% of that 9.9 million jobs, 43% of those are in leisure, hospitality, and retail trade. So even though those categories only take up, you know, 20% of all of the jobs in the country, they take up 43% of the jobs that we've lost. So that sort of tells you that, and this is maybe silver lining, but it shows that the pandemic, as far as it's hit employment, has hit certain sectors more than others. And at the same time, those are the sorts of jobs where workers tend to live more paycheck to paycheck. Those are the workers that we have to worry about when they're not getting a paycheck, because they're not going to be spending their money. Going back to the Fed study I was talking about, those are the people who were spending their stimulus payments last year on rent and food and essential items rather than saving it or investing it or, you know, just putting it under their mattress. So it's important, you know, to include that in the whole equation here. You know, and the other nice thing about that segment of the workforce being affected is that once the pandemic is taken care of, if you will, I mean, once we're feeling better about going out to restaurants and you know, parks and you know, being around people, some of that employment is going to return, but not all of it. You've pointed out, you know, several weeks now that actually, I think you and Bob were talking about this when the pandemic first occurred, that a lot of jobs that are lost in this recession, in this pandemic, aren't going to be coming back. And some of it's going to be because of productivity gains, because we've figured out how to do things better. And some of it's going to be because there were outmoded businesses that, you know, just won't be coming back or won't be hiring as they will. And that's really what some economists are really concerned about, you know, foremost right now, including Janet Yellen, the new Secretary of Treasury, the Treasury of Secretary, and Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve Board. Both of them have been talking about the scarring, they call it, the scarring that occurs to the economy when people are out of work for a long time. And more of the numbers that we saw in today's jobs report shows that we've got more of a problem that way. 40% of those who are unemployed have been unemployed for 6 months or more.
And a big update from CBO, from the Congressional Budget Office this week, looking at expectations for some of the economic recovery this year.
Yeah, and they've actually upgraded their forecast for the economy, and that's a really bright spot. They're now saying that they expect the U.S. to get back to where it was economic-wise, you know, by mid-2021. So mid-year, we should be back, you know, where the GDP was back last February. Remember that we ended 2020 with the GDP, the gross domestic product, back 2 years ago. I mean, it was as low as it was at the end of 2018. The same forecast, though, again, looking at the job side, doesn't expect the jobs picture to be back to where it was before the pandemic until 2022. So they're seeing much of a lag there in picking up the job side of it. But other things in the economy are happening. And we saw more of that in numbers this week from the Institute for Supply Management, both their manufacturing index and their services index. The services index was the strongest it's been in 2 years. Manufacturing, we had factory orders are up. They're within 1% of where they were last February. Housing, we saw construction spending is at a record high, and it's being driven by housing. So there are good things that are happening in the economy. The one thing kind of that we have to keep in mind is what's happening with employment.
You know, Joel, I think we talk about the economy and we often draw the connection to what that means for stocks. The flip side of that is that the stock market and the economy are not the same thing in many ways. We saw that obviously last year, where the markets were already looking ahead to what was going to come, but also that there's some pretty significant differences, for example, between what you typically think of as the stock market and what we think of as, you know, the employment indicators, what we think of as the economy more broadly. And you need only look at something like the S&P 500, where more than a third of the S&P 500 is technology stocks and communication services stocks. So media, social media, those kinds of things. It's only 2% of the employment here in the U.S. It's only about 6% of gross domestic product, though. And so when we talk about, you know, the stock market, there are reasons why the stock market can do even better than the economy. We've seen that in earnings forecasts year after year where, you know, earnings growth can happen at 10, 12, 20%, even as the economy is growing at 2.5. But we also see it in years in which, you know, the economy does as poorly as it does and stocks still find ways to make money because many of those businesses, even beyond being pandemic proof, benefited from the pandemic. And so, you know, I think we talk about, you know, especially hospitality and leisure being significant drags on the economy. They're going to be significant drags because of the job loss on stocks as well. But there is a flip side to that, and that is that stocks and the economy are not the same thing. You know, maybe just to stress the other big thing that we've seen for many years was a dollar that had been very, very strong that obviously hurts U.S. investors looking to invest overseas. They've got to do that in foreign currency. And so when they over time accumulate those non-U.S. positions and then they want to bring them back into the U.S., they've got to buy a dollar that's more expensive than when they made that investment years before. And so that had been a headwind to foreign investors. We've seen some signs that perhaps the dollar has peaked, some signs even perhaps that we may start to see a tailwind for investments. But you know, beyond simply foreign investment, there's other areas that benefit from a weaker dollar. There's other areas that are challenged by a weaker dollar. Paige, I know that's certainly something that you look at. Any particular opportunities you see, you know, as we talk about the potential for the dollar to weaken from here?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, obviously, when you're looking internationally, international investing, that's going to be a tailwind win for that as we start to see the dollar weaken. That's, like you said, better for those profits. But that also impacts companies on the domestic level. So when you're looking at multinational companies that have a lot of their earnings abroad, as you were saying, when they bring that money back to the United States, they're also going to see an increase in earnings there, which of course ends up being a tailwind for the large cap stocks while also being a headwind for those small cap, more domestic based ones that have to focus more on importing rather than exporting. So while we have seen small caps come back a little bit, especially near the end of last year, I think that going forward, we're going to continue to see that outperformance in the large cap space in the U.S. as well.
And I think that's such an important thing that we look at is when we're allocating portfolios, you know, one of the questions is, do we go to small caps or large caps? Do we go to growth or value? And there are absolutely reasons why you want a little bit of everything. But I think, you know, as you say, there's some tailwinds for some of those bigger companies, some tailwinds for the multinationals. The other piece of this, though, is that with interest rates as low as they are, many investors are wondering where returns are going to come from, you know, in the 5 to 10 year window as we look ahead. And I think for some that maybe points to a little bit higher exposure to stock, but you've got to be careful there too.
Yeah, it's fascinating how I've seen certain investors react negatively. When the market goes down, all of a sudden they want to have less in the stock market. When it goes up, they want to have more in the stock market. And so I think it's very important for investors to resist the temptation to react emotionally to what's going on Wall Street. We use bonds, we use fixed income to stabilize portfolios. So you make it through anything regardless of what lies ahead. We know corporate profits are forecast to go up 24% this year, at least at the present time. That's just a forecast. We know if you look out to 2022, they're forecast to go up perhaps 16%. So there's definitely reason to be buying stocks. And we also know that with more spending may come more inflation. With more inflation, we're going to get higher yields on the 10-year treasury and on bonds in general, which can cause bonds to lose money. So these same investors who are concerned about having too much, you know, in the stock market when it's going down, you know, who may want to get out of bonds and go into stocks when they go higher, you can't do that. You shouldn't do that. You should have a portfolio that's right for, you know, the long haul, because we never know what lies ahead. We did not know at this time last year that we were going to have a pandemic and that the stock market, the S&P, was going to drop 35% in 1 month. So those bonds are your, you know, they provide safety, stability. I can't emphasize enough how important it is to not desert bonds just because we can anticipate, you know, higher interest rates going forward.
And just building off that a little bit, Art, is, you know, not only do you want to look at your mix between stocks and bonds, but you also have to pay attention to what your bond portfolio looks like overall. So when we have an expectation of rising interest rates, it might be tempting to say, let's get out of those long-dated bonds completely and shift only on the short term. But like you said, it's very, very difficult to predict where those interest rates are going. And while shorter dated bonds may help you protect against that interest rate risk, the longer dated bonds are going to be the ones that protect you more against that stock market risk. So it's not just about the mix between stocks and bonds, but also looking at what type of holdings you have within your stock and bond portfolios.
Paige, are such great points. I think as we talk about what the road ahead looks like, it continues to be balance. That's key to what you know, what's important to investors. It continues to be balance. That's key to how we get from, you know, where we are in an environment that's incredibly uncertain, but which is starting to look a bit more optimistic, to an environment that, at least according to a lot of forecasts, might very well be back on its way to growth. And so I appreciate your inputs, obviously. I appreciate the thought that you put into those answers. As always, we enjoy doing this for everybody, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.